I'm Chris, an alcoholic. Glad to be here. Glad to be sober. Thanks, Billy. My sobriety date is September 13th of 2001. The Midtown Group in Washington, D.C. is my home group, which meets tonight in about an hour and a half, which I will not be at tonight, which is the only reason I'm not there is because I'm here. And now in Bethesda, we've moved around a little bit, and but we have a good place in Bethesda now, a nice theater. And where the sets change every week, which so it's pretty cool, you know, and you get some new things to see every week. I've been at that same home group ever since my first day sober. I've had the same sponsor but this is the first day sober. I met my sponsor, it was on a Thursday, the 2 days after 9/11. And I went to, that was my first meeting, not my first meeting back. I'd been sober previously, and I guess I'll talk about that, but you know, I think it's important. The only reason he's still my sponsor is because he hasn't drank. You know, he's still active in AA. He does more than I do, and I really want what he has, and that's why I haven't found it necessary to get another sponsor. You know, I've thought about it many times. You know, when he tells me things I don't want to hear and tells me the truth, really. And it's funny because I'll look out, you know, when I'm sitting in my home group or things like that, and I'll find the guys who I think would be easy on me, you know, and who I think would be easier to talk to or easier to be honest with and tell me what I want to hear. And I don't know. And when I get that way, I know, you know, I'm off the beam, you know, and I still feel uncomfortable around the guy. You know what I mean? You know, almost 7.5 years sober. He still makes me nervous. Which I think is a healthy fear for sure. And I hear stories about guys sober 20, 30, 40 years and still get uncomfortable around their sponsor, you know? So I know there's something good happening there. It is the most important relationship in my life, I believe. And if I'm not right with him, I'm not right with anybody. I'm not right with my family. I'm not right with you know, maybe someone that I sponsor, my friends, my relationships at work. It all starts with my sponsor for me. And thank God for that. Thank God I've been taught to, a friendship has developed, through honesty with him and through working the steps. I don't know. And so I've been thinking a lot about that recently. I was just telling Billy, I had a pretty hard hitter close to me. I mean, you know, Jimmy and I have been pitching brothers for, I guess, 7 years now. And there's another guy that came into the home group. We came in about a month apart, I guess. I came in September. He came in August of 2001. And we had been, you know, side by side in AA. We had the same sponsor, hung out. I mean, every day, lived together, did everything in AA together, you know, and he just left last week, you know what I mean, decided to go drink. So tonight, you know, the alcoholism is, you know, alive and well in me, and it really makes me grateful for what I have, you know what I mean, and the relationship I have with my sponsor and being active in AA. Because I'll tell you, I mean, this thing is real. I feel it more tonight than I have in a long time. It's something I've really been thinking about the last couple of weeks, you know. Because it's funny, you know, and if you've been here and you've been close to someone who's left, and you can kind of see, you know, looking back in hindsight, you can see where we start to split paths. You know what I mean? I would want to do certain things, and he would maybe stay home a night or two. And maybe it's not so important to tell your sponsor the whole story, or you might want to not do this and do that and get to pick and choose. And I think the bottom line here is just I'm grateful for my first step. I don't question my alcoholism. I know I'm alcoholic. I love alcohol. I love what it does for me. I love everything about it. I was thinking, you know, we were just over at that pig and steak place restaurant across the way, and I was looking at the bar over there and thinking, like, you know, honestly, I mean, it looked like kind of a weak bar, you know, and I was thinking, you know, I'm glad I never drank in that place, you know what I mean, and because the bar looked kind of weak. Excuse me if you've ever drank there. I'm sure it's fine. It's not like I'm a high-bottom drunk at all. I mean, I probably would have drank there, too, if they served me. But what I was thinking about is if I was sitting there by myself alone, it would be a miserable state, whether it's there or whether it's anywhere, really. But I still have this keen awareness of alcohol. You know what I mean? I notice the bar there. I'm sure I'll notice it next restaurant I go to. You know, I love everything about it. My first drink, I don't remember my first drink. I don't remember the first time I got drunk. But I do remember drinking, for sure. I remember going through school and I remember, you know, I'd take sips off my dad's gin and tonic when I was young, and I was so fascinated with the way I'd watch him make these drinks, and he would crush the ice in one of those ice crushers, and I'd watch him pour the gin and the tonic water, and he would pour me a glass of orange juice with tonic water too, so I'd have my own little mixed drink, you know, and I thought that was so cool. And then after a while, I started taking sips off his gin and tonic, which tasted a lot better than the orange juice and tonic. And that was my introduction to alcohol. I would always take sips off his beer, and I'll drink the foam off the tops of his beers, and I loved it. I loved everything about it. And my mom would tell me stories. You know, we were talking about it the other day. She would tell me how she would always notice. I mean, the sips will get bigger and bigger off the sips I was taking as a kid. You know, and I don't think that's what makes me an alcoholic. I don't think I was alcoholic back then. I just think I really liked alcohol. I had this fascination with it. You know, what makes me an alcoholic is the reaction I get when I drink. You know, I have the craving that talks about in the book. Once I start drinking, I can't stop. And everything about it, I love the way it makes me feel. I love how this nervousness that I always carry around, this negativity that I always have, this feeling of indifference that I continue to carry on. Even today, drinking would take that away. You know, I was naturally uncomfortable my whole life. Even as a kid, when I would drink, that would go away. It was easier to talk to girls. It was easier to, you know, to talk to the guys, to feel like I'm a part of. I always try to hang out with the older guys, and it made me feel more comfortable when I was with them. And I just thought it was cool. I mean, these guys would feed me beers, and I'd sneak out of my house and go over to their house, and, you know, their parents would be sleeping, and we'd be down in the basement. I was only 13, 14 years old. I mean, I was a kid. And I loved it. I loved it. I would puke on the way out, and I'd try to find my way home, and I'd sneak back in the house, and it was fine, and there were no consequences. And again, I mean, I never, if you would have asked me, are you alcoholic when you were 13, 14 years old, I would have told you I have no idea. I didn't know what alcoholic was. I just would tell you that I enjoyed to be drunk. I liked the way alcohol tasted. I never relate to people in meetings when I talk about, like, they just drank for the effect, and that's it. I mean, I love the way it tasted. I love the way it looked. I loved everything. Yes, I liked the effect, and it was a byproduct of everything else, of just the alcohol itself. But I was fascinated with it. I'd keep the bottles in my room, and I'd put them up everywhere, like the Absolute bottles and all these. And I was, you know, I'd have the posters up. I mean, I played the part for sure. And I'd have all the, you know, everything involved with it I had and I wanted. And so time went on. I mean, I was still young, so it was hard to drink every day. But when opportunity arose, I drank, and I knew where the liquor cabinet was in my house. And I figured out that the clear liquors I could fill up with water. You know what I mean? So I drink those, and it was tough to, because when you water down like the brandy and the rum, it's kind of more difficult because it loses its color. You know what I mean? It's easier to get caught. So, but like, you know, the vodka and everything else, I'd fill back up with water, and I caught on to that. And so they would mark the lines on the bottles, and I'd have to fill it back up, or they'd put tape on the cap, you know, so if I took the cap off the tape, and they'd put their little initials on there. So they'd put tape on it and write their initials on it, and I couldn't duplicate their initials, so that was a problem. And they tried to think of everything to get me to stop, and there were no consequences. It was just fun, but at this time, I think what happened was I started, you know, I would see my friends or my parents would see the direction my friends were going, the direction I was going. And I was starting to get into trouble, you know. And in the fourth grade, before I'd even taken a drink, some guy threw water on a girl that I liked, so I punched him. You know what I mean? I was self-centered. I liked a girl. He was treated her badly, so I thought I should punch him in the face. And I got suspended. You know, that's like, there was no thought of, you know, is this going to get me into trouble? I'll just do it. And that's the story of my life. You know, I see something in front of me, and I do it, regardless of not even thinking about the consequences. And that was the MO I had all the way up, probably until today. You know what I mean? I think I have a good idea. I won't run it by somebody, and I'll just do it. You know, and the only difference is now I have somewhat of a conscience, which I can differentiate the true from the false. You know what I mean? Which I have now. But back then I didn't have that. And so I'll go on to drink through middle school and got suspended again, and I was just a troublemaker. I mean, I'd bring a knife and a pager to school and get caught with that, get suspended, you know, because I thought that was cool. And I don't know why I carried a knife on me. It's not like I was going to stab anybody. I just wanted to feel tough, you know. And I continued to drink and do a lot of other things. And And then what happened is my parents started sending me to psychiatrists. They knew that something was going on. They knew I was always tired, you know, because every time they come home, I'm tired. And so they sent me to the psychiatrist, and they would ask me. And they'd ask me certain questions that, if you've been to the drinks, you've heard. You know, they ask me about my drinking. You know, are you drinking? And I'd say yes. And they'd say, how much? And I'd say, maybe one. And I'd lie. And they'd give me the questionnaire about the kind of drugs I was doing. I'd lie and say I wasn't doing drugs. And so they would prescribe me medicine. They'd tell me I was ADD. They'd give me Ritalin. And they'd tell me I had a learning disability. And I don't know if there was medication for that, but they gave me a lot of Ritalin. And I'll snort that, and I thought it was a joke, really. I mean, I'd go and I'd talk to these people, and my parents spent a lot of money. I mean, they really wanted to help me. They didn't know what was going on, and because the longer, you know, the older I got, the more uncomfortable I felt, and the more of a taker and a jerk I was around the house, and so they sent me to one psychiatrist, and I talked to her, and they sent me to another one, and I'd always cancel, and you know, I'd cancel on the window that you're not supposed to cancel, but still get charged anyway, you know what I mean? And, you know, so with no regret, you know, with any thought that I might be, that my parents are paying for these people and trying to help their son, I never thought that. I mean, I'll just take from right underneath them. I'd steal money from my father's wallet. I'd clean my mom out. I'd clean her purse out. I'd steal from my sister. I mean, whatever was in front of me, I'd take. I'd take from my grandmother who lived in the basement. And I was a thief. I really was. I mean, wherever I was obsessed with stealing. I'd go into a store and I would steal something that just meant nothing. You know, I mean, I stole a fishing pole from Kmart one time. I don't fish. You know what I mean? I thought it'd be a good idea to steal a fly rod, steal a fly fishing pole. And who knows why I was there and I wrote a bad check from a party I was at and I stole, you know, the lady's checkbook. And I would just do things like that without, you know, and I was, again, looking back, I was a taker. If you put me in your house and I was drinking, I was going to steal something, or I was going to break something, or I was going to get in a fight. And I was the guy. I was that guy who would show up at your house and just make everyone feel uncomfortable, you know. And I'd pull out a bunch of drugs and do it right on your coffee table in front of everybody, you know. And over time, people don't like hanging out with those kind of people, you know. And so my friends got smaller and smaller and smaller, you know. And I would see when I was in high school, I loved playing soccer. I was very good at it. And a lot of friends were getting scholarships to colleges and things like that. And I started playing soccer in high school, and they wanted me to practice every single day, which became a serious problem. You know what I mean? Because after school, I wanted to drink. And so I started, you know, what happened was drinking got in the way of a lot of things in my life. I chose to drink over playing soccer. I chose to drink over studying, you know, and I was failing out of high school. And so the first thing I did is they thought they sent me to Idaho. So they sent me out in the middle. We were talking about this on the way up. Someone was like, "Have you ever been to Idaho?" And I said, "Yeah, actually, I have." They sent me out to Idaho, and there's five boys out there, and there's two counselors. And our goal was a 3-month program, and it was a behavior modification course. You know, and that's what they termed it. But all of us were just major drinkers. You know what I mean? All the kids. And so I got along with everyone great. And we're literally in the middle of Idaho. I mean, there's moose walking around right outside the camp. And everyone got a tent, and we had this negative 40-degree sleeping bag, because it was like negative 20 outside. And they give you a tent, and you have your sleeping bag. I mean, it was so cold where I'd take my contacts off. And I had to keep my contact case in the bottom of my sleeping bag, or else it would just freeze, you know. And so it was miserable. It was terrible. And we had to build a log cabin. And that, because once we built it, we were able to live in a log cabin. And the faster we build, the faster we can get out of the damn tents, you know. And there was no alcohol out there. I mean, there was nothing. It was tough because we're all young and we're in the middle of the woods. But we were able to go into town. Every week, it would take us into town to do our laundry and get McDonald's or something. It was a treat. And I'll go into town, and there were certain kids that were giving pills to. And I found some way, you know, and I found a way. I remember buying cough syrup, and I would drink the cough syrup. And I always found a way, you know, to alter my mood. And I couldn't drink out there. And if I could have, I would have, you know what I mean? And all it took is after a month, you know, some guy, one of the counselors opened up one of the tents and I was snorting pills, you know what I mean? And before I knew it, boom, I was gone. And another few $1,000 my parents had thrown down the drain. I couldn't even finish a 3-month program in the middle of the woods in Idaho. I mean, that's where I was at. And, uh, And so, you know, they sent me back and, you know, back at school again. And by this point, there was really, the conversations with my parents were pretty lame. I mean, that it was just this constant struggle of what's Chris going to do next, you know what I mean? And now looking back and seeing and having friends with kids and seeing families and I don't have any children, but my sponsor's got children. I watch him with his kids, and I can't even imagine the kind of heartbreak I put them through, to put the people in my family through. And you know, and where I would just leave. I mean, I'll run away. I'd go up to Atlantic City and not call and take the car and just an absolute tornado. You know what I mean? Like it talks about in our big book, without any thought of anybody. And really, what I stole, and I stole a lot of money. I stole a lot of things from them, but it's the peace of mind that I'm making amends for now. You know what I mean? It's not the money, and I am. I'm starting to make, you know, and I'm paying people back, and I'm making those amends financially. And but the real, I mean, right now, what I'm trying to give back is just showing up and trying to be a son, because I was never a son for years. You know, I would lie to their face, and they knew full well that I was so full of it, and they would just, you know, they would listen to me and smile. You know what I mean? And they didn't have it. They didn't know any other way. They were going to do whatever it took to help me. And I would spit it right back in their face. So time went on. And finally, they sent me to, they found a rehab for me to go to. It was down in Florida. And by this point, I was doing a lot of drinking. I was failing. I remember before this, I'd sat them down. I was like, let's have a serious talk. Because we'd always have talks and contracts and ideas on how, you know, Chris was going to get help and live his life. And we sat down, and I sat them down, and I said, here's the deal. I said, I think I want to drop out of high school. And I, like, planned it all out. I said, I want to go work, because that'll help me. And I didn't know where I was going to work. I mean, I was going to be a high school dropout. And I said, that's a terrible idea. You know, you're not dropping out of high school. I was still underage. And then they sent me to rehab. You know, they were like, why don't we send you to rehab? And I looked, and my mom told me where she wanted to send me, and it was a treatment center in Florida. And I saw Florida, you know, how bad could it really be? It's warm, you know, and it was terrible, you know. It was in Orlando. It was absolutely terrible. It said it was a 9-month treatment center. I was like, okay, 9 months. How bad could that be? If I'm really going to get better. By this point, I knew, if you would ask me, I knew I was hurting people, and I really wanted to get better. I didn't think I really want to stop drinking, but I want to stop hurting people, you know, and I hadn't been in that much trouble yet. And so I was like, why not? You know, it'll be a way to finish high school. The rehab had like a school you go to, and they would transfer the credits to my high school. And I was like, perfect. You know, it's in Orlando, so we get down there. And it was terrible. I was like, 9 months. But the 9 months part was not really true. I mean, no one in the history of this rehab would ever finish it in 9 months. You know, most people were two plus years. You know, and I quickly found that out, and they took everything from me, you know, including my shoes, my belt. I mean, like, it was crazy. It was like living in purgatory for 9 months, to be honest. But the one thing they do is that they did introduce me to 12 steps. That's one thing that they did. I learned the 12 steps. I learned about them. I didn't really learn them or get involved or take any of the steps. I memorized them, so I could spit them back to you, so they would move me on in treatment. And they would stand me up to share, and I felt like they always would confront me and tell me how full of it I was and how sneaky I was. And they would say when I get up to share, my eyes would start looking around, so they always thought I was lying, you know, and I was just nervous. And everyone else would get up and cry, and they'd clap, and I never cried, so they never clapped for me, you know what I mean? And then one time I got up and I cried and I shared, and there was like the best day, you know, and everyone claps and they moved me on, which was really nice. Even there I was still trying to play the part, you know. I was trying to figure out what they wanted to hear so I can give it back to them, you know. And I tried to play the game for as long as I could, and I couldn't do it anymore. And I turned 18. I found out that I wasn't court ordered to be there anymore, and I left, and I called my dad. And at this point, my dad and my mom had separated after being married for 27 years. It's just, you know, and I think, you know, they had a lot of stuff going on, and my dad felt one way, my mom felt one way. My mom wanted me there, my dad did not want me there, and so I knew who to call. I knew I could call my dad. My mom wouldn't help me, because she wanted me in the rehab, And so I called my dad, and he was like, you know, I'll fly you home. So he flew me home. And I went to a deprogramming place first because he thought I was in a cult. So he sent me to this deprogramming place, for which was really interesting, and because there were people there who were in some serious cults, you know, and it was pretty awkward, and I honestly don't remember much about it. I was in most of a haze the whole time, and so I went there and I came home, and the one thing that they did tell me, they said, go to AA. They said, if you leave, go to AA. And I was like, okay. And because I hadn't been to AA thus far. And so I had, I guess what I had was, I'd been in treatment for, I guess, 11 months, I think. And I got out of there, I think it was in early 2000. And so I went to AA. I found some meetings to go to, and I went. And actually, you know, and I found this out much later, is that the meetings I were going to was a lot of people I still am sober with now. You know, and I went, and I got a sponsor, because everyone bombarded me and asked me if I had a sponsor. So I got this guy. His name was Matt. And he had me working the steps. But I still had this idea in the back of my head, like, you guys are losers. You know, I don't want what you guys have. I listened to meetings. I thought people were so full of it. I thought they were two-faced, and I thought, I don't relate to this. I'm only 18 years old. I didn't drink the way you guys drank. I wasn't really paying attention anyway, but I would just judge everybody. I'd sit in meetings and I would judge. And I still wanted that old lifestyle. AA seemed so boring to me. They kept on saying, come to the beach with us and hang out and sit on the beach and we'll all be sober and it'll be fun. And it just didn't sound fun to me. It sounded lame. I wanted to go to clubs, and I wanted to meet all the fast women, and I wanted that lifestyle, you know, and that wasn't what AA was offering me, you know, at that time. And it's not offering me that now either, really. So I did. I mean, I started talking to this guy, and I always had one foot out the door. I refused to let go of the old life. You know, I still had the old friends that I was talking to, and I was not telling my sponsor about this. So I had the AA friends that I'd put on the AA Chris when I'll come to AA meetings, and then I would leave and I'd call my old friends, and I'd be that guy, and I'd be the old Chris out here. You know, and they'd know, and I went off to rehab. You know what I mean? And but they would still talk to me, and before I know it, and I even did a fourth step. I did a fourth and a fifth step with my sponsor, and I really didn't have a problem with that. I was honest. I told him everything, and I felt no relief. I mean, there was no sincerity to it. He had me go through the book, and I told him my fifth step, and it wasn't a big deal because I already done a lot of those things when I was in treatment, and I made a list of all the things I had done, and it was very similar to a four step. It wasn't a four step as outlined in the book, which I had then done coming into AA, and so what happened was, after a meeting one time, I decided I'd stop by one of my old buddy's houses, and I was at the wrong place at the wrong time. He invited me to go to the beach that weekend with them, you know, not with AA. And so, of course, I said, perfect. And my dad just bought me a new car, so I was feeling extra cool, you know what I mean, that day. And I was like, perfect. You know, it was him and two other girls, and I said, perfect, you know. And so I went to the beach with no thought of drinking. And I was like, I'm just going to go to the beach, and I'm going to have fun. And I didn't drink that weekend. Actually, it was a nice weekend. And they drank, and I was, you know, the guy that wasn't drinking, you know, the responsible one, thinking that would win me points with the girls we were with, you know, like, I'm responsible, I don't drink, and it's cool if you guys want to, but I'm not going to. And I came back home, and that was it, and continued to go to AA. But what that had done is, I mean, I watched the way they drank, and it seemed the delusion I had was that it seemed like they were having so much more fun than these lame people in AA, you know. And because they were going to the beach, and, you know, we were riding around in a fast car, and it seemed like the girls were more fun, and everything just seemed more fun. And you know, I think subconsciously I thought, I want to do that again. You know what I mean? I want to do that again. And very slowly I started to kind of back myself at AA. You know, a lot of what I was talking about when I first stood up here about my buddy. You know what I mean? And so what happened, I decided to meet up with him again. We went to a diner, and I talk, I guess, in a lot of detail about this because it means a lot to me. I mean, this is where I took a drink after being sober for a period of time. I mean, I hadn't had a drink in me in over a year, you know, and I was as sober then as I am now, you know, and I wasn't thinking right, you know, but I was sober. I hadn't had a drink, and I was dry, and they sat me down, and my buddy just ordered me a Corona, you know. He said, "Hey, why don't I order you a drink?" And I said, "Sure." And that's all it was. I mean, it was like just in passing. He said, "Why don't I order you a drink?" I said, "Perfect, no problem." And they ordered me a Corona, and I remember the thought going through my head before I drank it. I was staring at it, and I thought, "This is probably a bad idea," you know. And I just drank it. Before I knew it, I tipped it up and drank it. And And there was no defense. You know, just like it says, there was no defense against the first drink. I had nothing. It was staring at me right in the face. And I thought, this is probably a bad idea, which thinking alone did not keep me sober. You know what I mean? And the thought of maybe I shouldn't be here, the thought of maybe I should call my sponsor. And I thought of maybe my parents had just spent thousands of dollars on me in this rehab. I'd been away for a year, you know, and gotten in tons and tons of trouble. None of that went through my head. It was maybe like, yeah, that's probably a bad idea, but hey, why not? And I drank. And I don't remember much more about that night. I remember I only had one or two, and I went home, and it was fine. But I'd already drank, you know, so that I was off to the races again. And of course, I never went back to AA after that and got honest. Because I know what they were going to tell me. I felt like they were going to look down on me, I have to pick up another white chip, and I'd be new again. When I was really new the first time, and I guess it was funny, because when I first went to the group, people would ask me how long I'd been sober, and I thought I had 11 months sober, but I'd been locked up in a treatment center for 11 months. I knew nothing about how to stay sober. I would see the guys that had been sober a year or 2 years, and they looked like they had a lot more going on than me. I mean, I was a newcomer. So I left, and my drinking really, really took off. And I drank for 9 more months, and that 9 months is was absolutely terrible. I'd done and seen things I really would not wish to ever see or do again. You know what I mean? I moved away, I moved down to Florida because I thought that would help me. Not Orlando, a different place. A nice little. I knew a girl. Her dad was a billionaire, owned this beautiful resort down in Florida. He sent us down, and we worked as bellmen on this beautiful resort on the island somewhere on Captive Island, down by Fort Myers, you know. And I mean, it was gorgeous. Like I had this little apartment in the employee housing, which was fine, you know. And you walk out, my backyard was like white sand and clear water, you know. And it was beautiful. But I mean, I couldn't stop drinking. You know, I could not stop. And now I was living by myself, and I had my best alcoholic friend with me, you know. And it was perfect because he loved to drink. And he would drink in the mornings, in the shower, and we'd drink together, you know what I mean? And we'd drink at night, and we'd drink before I'd drive the troll bus around with all the guests on there, you know, like they had the trolley that would take you around the island, and I'd be driving that drunk, you know what I mean? And it was perfect. It was a perfect job for me, and it was awesome. But what happened was the seed of AA was planted, you know what I mean? I was just listening to the story. My grandsponsor told a story about the beginning of AA, you know, and how, you know, when Bill got 12 steps, he didn't stay sober right after he got 12 steps, but the seed was planted, and that's what he talked about, you know, whenever he came and sat him down and talked to him, and the seed was planted in his head, and he was never able to get that out of his head, and I relate to that. That was my experience, you know, that I'd been to AA, people talked to me, I was able to see sober people and how they lived. I didn't believe it, but some small part of me thought that AA is possibly a solution for my drinking, you know, And I was never able to get that out of my head for the next 9 months. It didn't stop my drinking, for sure. But I definitely thought about it from time to time. And I went on drinking, and things got bad. You know, I was a daily drinker. I left that job and moved to Gainesville because I thought I'd maybe, you know, go be a Gator, go to college. I barely graduated high school. I'd never even taken an SAT. There was no way I was getting into college. You know what I mean? And my drinking continued, and I would go to these parties with the college kids, and the only difference was they were actually in college, and I was just kind of there being a loser, you know what I mean, drinking. I'll tell you, it was a pretty lonely place, and there was a few certain things I really think about when I think about when I was hitting my bottom. One time in particular, you know, where I was working at a tire shop. My boss was this, you know, he was in his 40s, and I had this townhouse out there with a couple buddies, all drinkers, and he came over one night, and we were doing a lot of things at the house, and I remember not being able to sleep that night, and I remember waking up, and he was sleeping on my couch, and he had left his wife and his kids at home, and I had to give him a ride the next morning, and what I remember about that night is seeing this guy. He was my boss, and he was, you know, mid-40s, and left his wife and his kids at home because he wanted to sleep on my couch because he was too loaded to go home to his family, you know. And that really hit me, you know. And it wasn't that we got in tons of trouble that night, you know. It was just another night. But looking at this guy, seeing him sleep on the couch, knowing his wife and his kids were home, having to take him home the next morning, and having to drop him off down the street, you know, so his wife wouldn't see him get out of my car, that really hit me, you know. It was a quick kind of glimpse of, like, this is where I could be. You know what I mean? If I continue where I'm going, this is where I could be in the next 20 years if I continue drinking like this. And But again, you know, that it's not like that stopped me. And, you know, and some things happened. And, you know, some of the guys like me telling the story, because I say I was arrested for a felony, which it was. But it was for a fake ID, you know, and it wasn't anything macho, you know. I had a fake ID, and they put me in jail, you know what I mean? And it was just a bad night. And they threw me in jail for 36 hours, which was plenty, you know. I hated being there. But it was a series of events, you know. And a girl I've been dating got in a terrible accident and passed away, you know what I mean? And this is the second thing. And right before I got sober, she had a funeral, you know. She had a funeral up in the D.C. area in Potomac where she lived, and her family loved me. She loved me. You know, I loved her, and it was wonderful. But I had a vacation planned to the Keys, you know, and her funeral conflicted with my vacation. So, of course, I went on my vacation to drink. You know what I mean? And that was the state of mind I was in when I, you know, right before I got sober. You know what I mean? And I knew where I had to be. I knew I should be supporting her and her family because of this funeral. And it conflicted with the vacation I had to the Keys with my buddy and some other girls to go drink. And that's about as low as I got, you know what I mean, in my drinking. And then 9/11 happened, and I got sober. And the way I got sober is nothing. It wasn't a bad day, you know. I just woke up and I thought maybe I should call AA. That was it, really. I'd reached a point where some things were happening in my life, and I thought, if I don't change my life, if I don't ask for help now, who knows where I'm going to be? And it was just a quick moment of willingness. And I believe if I didn't pick up the phone and call AA, then I don't know if I'd still be sober today. You know what I mean? And for some reason, God intervened at that time. There was a little window of willingness that I picked up the phone and dialed a number. You know, I looked at AA up in the phone book, and I called, and thank God WAA was there to answer the phone. You know, and someone picked up the phone, and they directed me to a meeting. And that was the Thursday night meeting, you know. And that's where I found my sponsor. And he had me start on this, on the path. And I was still a cool guy. You know, I drove a motorcycle up to the meeting, and he was on a motorcycle, so I thought, perfect. You know, he'll be a great sponsor. And I just started talking to him, and I broke down, really. I mean, I broke down. I had nothing. And I told him, this is where my life has been. You know, I'm facing these charges, and I just lost my ex-girlfriend. And, you know, 9/11 just happened, which it didn't personally affect me, you know, but I, of course, it's all about me anyway, so I just made it about me, you know, you know, and I was like, you know, so, and that was my first day sober, you know, it was on a Thursday, and thank God, and he asked me a couple things. He asked me if I was really willing to go to any lengths to stay sober, like, are you willing to take direction from me, you know, and I said, you know, sure, absolutely, he said, well, this is the meetings I go to. This is where I think you should be. I want you to call me every day. You know, I'll send some guys to your house to pick you up the next day. And that was the beginning. And I think he really made it a point to come and hang out with me every day for my first 30 days. He really made it a point to be around me. Which thank God, that's something I try to do for maybe someone that I sponsor or other guys, you know. Because when I was new, I had no, anything could have happened. It could have just put me right out. I was so shaky, you know. And these guys really spent a lot of time with me, you know, when I was new. And because this ego that I have, I mean, kept on, I mean, I was sober maybe 2 or 3 days, and before I knew it, I was back judging everybody. You know, like, do I really need to be here? And it's so funny. I mean, if you look back at my life, I've just gone through all these things and done all these things and hurt so many people, and I'm sober 2, 3 days, and all of a sudden I'm thinking about drinking again. You know, and if a normal person listens to that, they'd think you're nuts, you know. But I am nuts, you know. I'm alcoholic. And I absolutely would have gone back out and drank if AA hadn't been there for me, and my home group hadn't been there for me, and the solid, you know, the solid men had, that he was sponsoring other guys, he'd send the guys to my house to meet up with me before the meeting, and I'll call them all the time and tell them everything that was going on, and that was the beginning of sobriety for me, you know, and AA has absolutely given me a lot, and he had me start working the steps, and he had me go into, I think when I was 3 or 6 months sober, he had me start going through the book. And I think, and the same thing I'll do if I'm sponsoring someone. I mean, I won't, like, jump right into a fourth and fifth step. I mean, I think you want to see if I really was serious about being sober. You know what I mean? It took time. It took time for me to continue to call him. I think for the first 30 days, he really called me and made the point. But after that, it was on me, really. You know, he was like, you know, if you want to call me and hang out with me, this is where I'll be. You know, and here's my number. Because I wasn't the kind of guy that you need to continue to tell me how good I was. You know, I wasn't like one of those guys. And I have friends like that they really need, you know, and there's nothing wrong with it. They need to be babied and told they're nice and things like that. And that wasn't me. You know what I mean? I was this egotistical jerk, you know, that needed to continue to be poked at, because I had this armor up that I was just such a cool guy. And there was a lot of ego deflation happening and a lot of me feeling uncomfortable, and a lot of my sponsor continued to tell me the truth, And he put me around other guys with time that would do the same thing, And if you've been that guy, a new guy, you're around other guys with time, and you're trying to put up this act, you feel uncomfortable real quick, And I definitely did. And I'll think, like, these guys' heads cannot be racing as much as mine is. I was always so nervous. And I'd sit in my seat, and I'd always be moving around. I'd go smoking or doing something, driving fast, or just saying the wrong thing at the wrong time to hurt someone's feelings, I had no way to live. I was just this nervous wreck. But they would always welcome me. They would always still invite me over, which was really nice. And when I was like 3 months sober, they took me out to Tahoe and took me snowboarding. And that was the first time. It was in January of 2002, and I guess I had 4 months sober. And it was the first time where I really felt joy. And I thought, I'm having fun. I'm sober. I'm not thinking about drinking. I'm with other guys in AA. And that was the beginning of thinking, like, I might really have a shot here. Because I'd never done anything like that drinking. Here I am 4 months sober. My grandmother was nice enough to send me out there and give me some money. And my sponsor said, is there any way you think you can get some money and come out snowboarding with us? And I said, I can try, so it was Christmas and my grandma sent me some money and I went snowboarding. And it was awesome and I was terrible at it, But the thing was, is that, all these guys knew how to snowboard, and it sounds ridiculous, but they probably spent 2 or 3 days, when they wanted to be over there on the big stuff, they spent 2 or 3 days on these little hills teaching me how to snowboard on their vacation, And looking back, they were getting out of themselves. They were helping the new guy. And yes, that has nothing to do with staying sober in AA. It has to do with trying to give, to someone else and get out of yourself, for sure. And the vacations and the things that I've done, when I'm not doing my agenda, I always feel better. It always feels so inconvenient to do it's not what I want. And looking back, I can see how much those guys really helped me. It's their vacation that they had paid a lot of money for, and these guys are good, and they spent a couple of days teaching the new guy, the new unbearable guy, how to snowboard, and it probably made their vacation awesome too, because they probably got a lot out of that, and it definitely did a lot for me. And we started going through the steps, and we did a fourth and a fifth step, which was nice. And it was the first time I really had a really honest conversation with my sponsor. I told another guy everything that I had done. I told him about, my sexual past. I told him about these resentments, I told him about the judgments I had and the feelings I had toward people in AA and outside of AA too. Because I also had resentments about people I was sitting in meetings with too. I had resentments and judgments against him at some point. Now that those came later, after my fifth step, But I had to get this stuff off my chest. It was killing me. And I talked to him about it, and he would share things with me. He would share things with me to make me feel comfortable. And he would tell me some of the things he had done and the resentments he's had and how he's been able to overcome those and what he's done in AA so he's gotten better, And the best analogy I like, is that it's, monkey see, monkey do. I would watch what he does. I would watch what he does, and I would just follow him around. I'd stay in his back pocket. And I still try to do that today as much as possible. I try to call him every day. I try to go where he's at. We had this little event last week, and it was really funny. Someone stood up, and they said, sponsorship is basically like a dictatorship. Which sounds really terrible, my sponsor dictates my life, but I can leave at any time. And it really made a lot of sense to me that I do. I give my sponsor veto power on everything in my life. I do. I try to run everything by him. If it's going to affect me or definitely affect someone else, I need to run it by somebody, especially members of AA in my home group, and I can either take the suggestion or I cannot, and I usually know what's going to happen if I don't, And I'm more than happy to walk out on this anytime I want. No one's keeping me here. No one's, tying my hands behind my back, making me do certain things. I do these things because I get the reward. I get to sleep at night. I get to stay sober. I get to live a good life. And I get to have real relationships with people, just like the relationship I had, with that guy and with my friends now who came here with me and other people in my life, And so we started to go through the book, and he had me take a look at the sixth and the seventh step. And a few years went by before he even let me write an eight-step list, you know. And he only let me write an eight-step list, I think, when I was five years sober. And I remember going to him when I was probably 3 years sober or something like that and asking him if I could start my eight-step, or maybe it was 2 years. And so I'd hear people talk in meetings about doing an eight-step. And so I said, you know, Kevin, I'd like to start writing my eight-step list. And he said no, and I was like, you know, why not? And he said, because you haven't changed at all, you know. And so, you know, which was like, okay. And, he said, how are you going to go out and make amends and tell these people and try to amend things when you haven't changed? You know, which was true. You know, I had done a lot in AA. I'd done a fourth and a fifth step. I'd come to meetings. I'd done events. And I wasn't hanging out with my old friends. But I was going home to the guys I lived with and still being a cool guy. I was still being a taker. I was still trying to take from my family. I wasn't self-supporting. I was still taking money. You know what I mean? Not stealing money, but my parents were still supporting me. You know what I mean? And looking back, I'm glad I never went and made those amends. You know what I mean? And same thing. I don't think if I were to go back and make amends to these people, I wasn't being a son yet. You know what I mean? And it took me... I mean, just a few months ago is the first time I've been completely self-supporting, you know what I mean? And not taking a dime from anybody, you know? And there's always been just a little bit, not a lot of money, you know what I mean? But just a little bit, you know, here and there. And I don't do that anymore. And I felt like now, you know, 7.5 years sober, I'm really starting to be, you know, like feeling the power of amends, you know what I mean? And, where my relationship is completely, there's no money involved, you know what I mean? There's nothing involved. It's just me and them, and I'm able to, you know, soon grow a friendship. And I'll tell you, anyone that I owe to, whether it's money or an amend, I don't feel right, you know what I mean? I think that's why he had me wait so long, you know, till I was self-supporting, and so I wasn't going over, you know, taking, not cleaning up after myself, still acting like a drunk, you know what I mean? And so he had me, you know, work on my list. There's a few things I did right away. You know, I went to this girl's gravesite and I made amends, you know what I mean? I did that 3 months over, because I come in AA with a lot of regret, you know, and I felt terrible for what I did. And so he had me write a letter, and I went and I brought, actually, you know, the guy I just was talking about that just left, he was with me. You know, he brought me over there, sat in the car. I read a letter and left on the gravesite, and I felt, you know, I didn't feel better right away, but I knew I'd done what I had to do. I would constantly go back and visit, you know, and catch up on the things I was doing, on how I was trying to be better, and how I found AA and the things I was doing. And I went to her family. I brought her family cookies one Christmas, you know, and said hello. And that was my amends for that, you know what I mean? And told him how sorry I was. And that was something I had done early on. And then I went back and I revisited the eight step, you know. And he had me go out and start making the amends. And which I think there, I really started to get a lot out of. You know, like I started a meeting back at our, back in Gaithersburg on Saturday nights at a church I'd grown up in. And every time I go to that meeting, I'd feel terrible because I stole money from that church. You know, and it took me a couple of years to finally come to my sponsor and say, you know, I owe an amends to this church. I took money. And so he said, okay, go write a $500 check and sit in the service and drop in the basket. And it was easy enough. And I spent 2 years thinking about this. You know what I mean? And he said, okay, well, go sit, you know, go on Sunday, write a check, and you know, it'll be done with. You know, you don't need to go sit down with the pastor and make a big drama out of it. You're not that important. You know, just go sit in the church and drop a check in. That's what I did. And you know, and I think you know, and again, I mean, thank God, because I always want drama. You know, I always want like this. You know, I want tears and I want like hugs and I want like, you know, I want him to tell me how wonderful our group is and how great, how many drunks it's helping and how. And all these, you know, and all these things, and I always want to be told how great I am. And he just said, you know, just go sit down, write a check, and drop it in. And that was not my idea of how to fix this thing, you know. Really, that's the story of my life. That's how AA has been for me. It's been, you know, I think I have a good idea. You know, in the beginning it was, you know, I would just do it. I would suffer the consequences, call my sponsor, and ask him how to fix it. You know, this is what I've done. Here's the damage. Help me play damage control. You know, this is why I've hurt. How do I fix it, you know? And then over time it was, okay, I see something. It's probably a bad idea. And I'm probably going to hurt somebody, but I'm just going to do it anyway, you know? And maybe I'll get honest with my sponsor. It depends how long I can go and how uncomfortable I can feel, you know? Now it is, thank God, you know, on a good day, it's, this is probably a bad idea, I shouldn't do this, you know what I mean, and just not do it. And I have a conscience, you know, that usually tells me what's right and wrong, you know what I mean, and I think I still had that when I was drinking. I mean, I would know a lot of things I was doing were hurting people, and today I'm actually able to hear myself. I can feel it in my gut when what I'm doing is wrong, you know what I mean. My gut doesn't lie to me, and I'll tell you, and being involved in our home group has done a lot for me too. You know, I mean, I love my group. I love the terrible things that it's gone, that, you know, that we've gone through, you know, over the last few years. You know what I mean? I've learned a lot. It's gotten me a lot into the traditions too. You know what I mean? About how important it is, you know, to, especially we're dealing with one right now. I mean, with, you know, we're having a hard time with some of the guys from the Saturday night meeting. We've had to really, I've dedicated myself to the sixth tradition recently, you know what I mean, and trying to think about, you know, the things I can bring up in a group conscience and what it could possibly do to help or hurt our group. And you know, I stood up in front of the group a couple weeks ago and thought I had an idea and had a few people supporting me, and everyone looked at me like I was nuts, you know, but I got to do that stuff, you know what I mean. I got to do, you know, I'd run up by my sponsor. I talked to my grand sponsor. I even talked to my great-grand sponsor out in California about it when I was out there seeing him on a retreat, you know, and I knew I had to do something about it, you know, regardless of how other members in the group were going to feel, you know what I mean? And so I did it, and it got shut down, and I'm going to bring it up again, you know what I mean? And I'm going to continue to bring it up until we get our way, you know? And so I guess it's a kind of a funny story. I mean, it's not funny when some of the things are happening in the group, but I mean, I've learned a lot, and I've learned a lot more than just not drinking. You know, I don't think about drinking today. I don't have that obsession and desire to drink anymore. You know, I've never I hear people talk about compulsions to drink. Fortunately, I've never really had a compulsion to drink. I've thought about drinking for sure sometimes in my sobriety, but I've never really felt the need, I need to go out and drink. I really feel like that's been relieved. You know, I feel like God's taken that from me. And I think it's because I've tried to continue to be active in AA, you know, I don't pull myself around these slippery places anymore where alcohol can seem like an option. I don't. My life is grounded in AA. AA comes first, and everything else has been a byproduct of that. You know, like the education and my job and, you know, the place I have to sleep and my friends. Those are a direct result of AA. If I leave AA tonight, I'm going to throw those things away. You know, it might take some time. I mean, it might take some time before my house gets foreclosed on, you know, or I leave my job, you know what I mean, because I work with guys in AA, you know, where my family would lose my trust again. I know it would take time, but I know, I believe what it says in here. Like, to drink is to die for me. I know that, and I believe that 150%. On a good day, I take AA really, really seriously. You know what I mean? And yes, I mean, there's times where I love to have fun. I love to joke around. I love to kid. I'm probably more sarcastic than I should be at some times. You know, but underneath that, I love AA, and I love what it's done for me, and it's given me so much. You know, I've seen a lot of people come and go. I haven't even been sober that long, you know. But I've seen a lot of people come and go, and the reports and the stories are never good, you know. Another thing I would think about really is that AA is, you know, it helps. And I don't try to convince people that they're alcoholics anymore. I used to do that when I was new. You know, if there was people that weren't sure, or if they were not sure if maybe they were an addict or maybe they're alcoholic or maybe they were too young. And I used to spend a lot of time with those people and try to, looking back, I mean, I really try to convince people, like, maybe you do need to stay. Just stay, you know, that sounds alcoholic, or maybe you are alcoholic. I don't do that anymore. You know, I think that you need to know for yourself. You know what I mean? That's what it took for me. And it even says in the book, if you're not sure, then drink and see if alcohol does for you what it does for me. You know what I mean? See if you can go out and stop drinking for a year. You know what I mean? See if you can go out and drink just one for a couple weeks. You know, because I know if you asked me to take that test, I'd fail miserably. You know what I mean? And it really took me hitting an absolute bottom before I knew that I conceived in my innermost self that I was alcoholic. I related to things in the book, and AA has done something for me. It's changed me from the inside out. You know, and I don't question that anymore. I don't question whether or not this is the place for me. You know what I mean? I know it's the place for me because it's given me so many results. You know, and I knew if I was an alcoholic, if I was just a crazy person, AA would do nothing for me. I would have gotten bored a long time ago, you know. When I have a new guy in the car and I'm talking to him about alcoholism, you know what I mean? Something happens to me, you know, and I feel better and I forget about all the other things that are going on in my life, the financial insecurity, you know, the sex problems, the power and the prestige problems, all those things. And thank God for that, you know, because I see a lot of normal people that just struggle from day to day and that are lonely. And then I have a family, my family of chance, which are great, but I have my family of choice, AA, my home group, which I love dearly, you know what I mean? You know, and I know if I can be of service in my home group and my family of choice, I know everything else will fall into place because it has, you know. And I don't know, so I'm going to end a couple minutes really here, but I just want to say, I mean, if you're new here, you know, welcome, you know, and I really hope you find what you're looking for here if you're alcoholic, you know, because this thing absolutely works if you do what's outlined in the book, you know what I mean, and don't listen to all the other crap you hear, you know what I mean, and you get a sponsor and you go to meetings. And you're honest with that sponsor, you know, and really investigate the steps and making amends, you know what I mean? And you find a higher power, you know, which I prayed to this morning, which I will pray to tonight, you know, which I believe keeps me sober, you know, and AA helps me, my sponsor helps me, but a higher power is what has kept me here, I believe, you know. It's been with me at the times where my sponsor has not been able to pick up the phone. You know, it's been with me at the times I felt shaky, you know, and as much as a simple prayer, you know, to a God that I really, truly that I understand. You know, I didn't understand God when I came in here. I was raised in a church. I thought God was a punishing God. You know, I thought that I would never understand this thing. And I found a God, you know what I mean? I found a God that's with me tonight that I know, if I continue to ask for help, will keep me sober. You know what I mean? And I can share with other people about, you know, Anyway, thank you guys very much for having me. It's been a pleasure. And thanks for my sobriety. Thank you, Billy.